Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into the latest Behind the Bets podcast. We are taping this on the Tuesday following Super Bowl Sunday, February 6th, as we put a bow on the NFL season and obviously discuss the Super Bowl betting numbers that were just released to this taping within the last 24 hours. Alongside Ben Fox, I am Doug Kazarian. And maybe not the best Super Bowl ever, Ben, but possibly the most exciting.
An exciting game to watch. I mean, you know, every game's exciting from a betting perspective. That's why we also love betting.
Sure.
But yeah, a lot of the props, you know, we'll talk to John Murray, we'll talk to David Purdom. I'm sure Murray's not going to be in too great a mood, I'm guessing. But, you know, it seemed like all the player props went over. And it's very tough to believe that, you know, Tom Brady with 505 yards, three touchdowns, not only doesn't win MVP, doesn't win the game,
right.
Period. Just very bizarre.
So those 505, a Super Bowl record for passing yards in a game. The points by the Patriots, 33, the most ever by the losing team in the Super Bowl. So, yes, a wacky game, 74 points, not the highest scoring, but close to that, did have over 1,150 yards, the most ever, not just in a Super Bowl game, not just in a playoff game, but in any NFL game ever. Think about the history, and that obviously affected the props. We're going to chat with, as you just mentioned, Ben, John Murray of the Westgate Las Vegas Superbook, and also David Purdom, who does a fantastic job for us here at ESPN and ESPN Chalk. We'll get his reporting as he posted some stories. Ben, I know you did some reporting on the props, but just a remarkable game. And, you know, what more can be said about Nick Foles, that story? It's just cool. And I always use my mom as a measuring stick. And she's like, how about that? When I talked to her yesterday, he almost walked away from the game and he came back. And it's true. It is crazy. And look, I don't want to say David Goliath, but in terms of franchise history, it was. Eagles, one of 13 franchises yet to win a Super Bowl, no longer. And then obviously the Patriots were going for their sixth.
Before we get into that, I'm more excited. We're just peeling back the layers here. We had a little of your dating life last time with the pizza prop. Now we have the mom coming in.
Yeah,
you know,
we've
really reached the pinnacle at the end of the season here. We finally drilled down. This is good.
My mom's on to me. I only call when I'm in the car.
Oh, boy.
You know, using the drive time.
Yeah.
Not when I'm at home and I could be doing something that maybe is a selfish person would want to do.
A call is a call.
Yeah, a call is a call. So, yeah. And then you get the West Coast time difference out in LA.
Mm.
So I get to bang out those calls like when I'm driving home at night. So, hey, I call more than my brothers do who have kids. So
there you go. Sorry.
I'm the baby. I'm the youngest of five. So I'm already the favorite son.
That is true. The youngest is. It's the same in my family. It's really true. It's the youngest sibling. Getting back to the game.
Oh, because I can do a whole podcast on the Kazarian family dynamic.
Well, we'll have this as a separate one-off special.
This will go on ESPN Plus that just launched, actually.
Exactly. Fewer sports. No, I thought the game was fascinating. Obviously, kind of closed New England, -4, 4.5. Total 48.5, 49. Didn't really matter. That was over pretty quick. I think, as you discussed, the yardage was interesting. They had a total yards prop at Westgate. I think it was like 733, 733 and a half.
Jeez.
So it's, you know, 400 yards, essentially. They went over there. We should mention I had one person tweet. I gave out Corey Clement.
I think I heard Clement.
All right.
But then again, I also have heard incorrect things on TV before.
All right. We'll call him Corey.
Yeah.
Corey
CC.
Over CC over 14 and a half. Receiving yards. That one cashed early. He sent a ticket, that he had bet $1,600 on this at -165. And I was a little, over under 9.5.
Okay.
Not 14.5. I was a little frightened that somebody put that much down, on one of my recommendations. I appreciate it. It was, you know, Bill Barnwell, who does a great job, liked that one. I know that John Perelin, who does a great job for ESPN Stats and Info, had that in our chalk betting guide. So there were a couple other people who liked it.
My buddy
as well.
Did as well. He texted me saying he heard the podcast and he really liked that play.
But
fantastic, fantastic handicap on your part.
It all worked out. I will, of course, be accepting cuts, you know, donations.
How does it feel to be a tout?
It's good. I'm 1-0, I think, right? I'm 1-0 in my last one. Don't worry about those playoff picks or some of those other ones in the regular season.
You know, I was on an email list a long time ago of a tout, and one of the says he distributed his game of the month, and then he followed up to some of the people on the list that aren't like paying subscribers. He's like, hey, by the way, disregard that. I just had to come up with a game of the month this week. So that's not exactly my favorite play of the month.
Like, that's good.
No shame. it's part of the business, but you giving out winners. My Tom Brady prop of completions over was not as in the bag. It was a bit of a sweat job. Obviously, the handicap was spot on because right away they're coming out chucking. But, you know, big chunk plays like an Amendola 50-yard completion was that sort of takes away the volume of pass attempts, which was my play. And so it came down to the fumble, Brandon Graham, strip sack. So Brady, I believe, depending on what number you got it at, 38.5, 39.5, 40.5, 41.5 pass attempts was right around the number. I believe it was sitting on 39 when he got sacked. So the Patriots D had to stop them and force a field goal attempt. If they get the first down, the Eagles do, then it's take a knee situation. Pats never get the ball back. Instead, field goal, and then Brady, a couple incompletions, fourth down completion. But once it got to the fourth down, it was already over. So it was a sweat job like they usually are. But I also delivered a winner.
Look, best bets cover. We'll give a shout out, you know, to our former boss, Chad Millman. I think his best bet was Nelson Aguilar over receiving yards. I think it was around 43.5, 44, 45. Came in, he had 84.
Okay.
So that was well in hand as well.
But the guys we had on the pod, so Aaron Schatz did great. He loved Amendola over.
Easy winner.
Easy winner, both receptions and yards. Talked about some other ones. Bill Barnwell struggled a little bit. We have to tease him next time.
A couple
he's on.
Rough ones. You know, Barnwell tweeted at me. He was like, I guess I'm not coming on next year. I said, no. You should see our records. You're fine. I also am a big proponent, and I know some people agree with this, some people disagree. You know, we are providing advice, but same thing at ESPN Chalk. It's all about the process. And if you're well-researched and you tell somebody the reasons that you are betting on it, you don't have to take the pick. You can also go against the pick. Basically, as long as you're made smarter, that's what I care about. Now, if you're hitting at 30%, then, you know, that could be a problem.
We're an automatic fade, though. But yeah, then you're exactly. An automatic fade, and that's fine. People want your input as well. Picking losers is just as hard as picking winners.
This is true.
Let's not forget that. So, obviously, we'll get into all the Super Bowl betting with John Murray and David Purdom coming up in a little bit, but close things out here. Underdogs, just a ridiculous run, 10-1 against the spread. The lone favorite to cover this postseason was the Patriots at home against the Tennessee Titans. Never really in doubt, although the Tennessee Titans did lead 7-0, and there was a phantom penalty called against the Titans to extend the drive. But nonetheless, it was a domination by the Pats in that game. But outside of that, it was all dogs.
Yeah. Amazing, and after last season, the opposite happened with favorites.
And I'm glad you brought that up. I made a mistake last year. It's 9-2 favorites went last year. I kept saying 10-1, but it was because the public went 10-1. It was a favorite. It was like I think the Steelers against the Chiefs were a dog +2.
Right. That was close. Yeah. It kept flipping.
Right. It kept flipping. So that's what my confusion. And then obviously the public was on the Steelers, I believe, in that game. So anyways, so the books got buried last year during the postseason. They did really well this postseason, except for the Super Bowl. David Purdom, we'll talk to him in a little bit, and we'll also talk to Murray about this, but technically it was a Super Bowl win for the sports books, the smallest percentage ever in the three decades that we've recorded things in Nevada gaming. But that's because it's important to remember that all the future bets, every single future bet, even like the Browns to win the Super Bowl, they aren't officially graded until the Super Bowl strikes zero on the clock. Right. Mm-hmm. So net win for the Super Bowl when you factor in the futures, but talk to any odds maker, it was the game itself was a loss.
Right, and I believe, is this the 28th Super Bowl now?
1991, I think, was what it is.
Yeah, so they have now winners, I believe, on 26 of 28, or if you count this as a loss, 25 of 28. They're doing well.
The other two was the Giants' first upset of the 18-0 Patriots, and the other one was the beatdown by the 49ers to the San Diego Chargers, where Steve Young, the monkey off his back, running around. But one thing it is important. You're right. It's a small loss, small win, whatever you want to say. But the books, when they do their budget for the entire calendar year, they factor in a win because they have such handle and they have such a straddle, whether it be the prop bets or the game itself with the money line, and they know how to maneuver to guarantee a profit. So they actually budget in a win. So even having a small win with the futures or whatever, it's actually a loss for their P&L sheet moving forward. But they had such a nice playoff run, did well in the college football playoff. So I think they're going to be okay, right? They'll be just fine. But that's something to keep in mind.
They'll be fine. And we should mention, we love him, of course. Boom. I think he had 24-21 Patriots. So
yes.
Didn't have the same score as the last. Yeah.
But he gave out the Eagles plus the points then.
Yeah. That's true. He did have Eagles to cover.
One thing, but just as a sports fan, what did you think of the game itself in terms of how it went down? And obviously, you know, look, I was dead wrong. I thought Bill Belichick would totally baffle Nick Foles. I was looking at that NFC Championship game as a one-off. And look, Foles delivered, and give him credit. He was awesome.
Yeah. I was very impressed with Doug Peterson, Frank Reich, whoever we are giving credit to for the offense. It was just an impressive performance. You know, I've said privately, less so publicly, but like Minnesota moved the ball in the NFC Championship game. Things happened. They had to go for certain things. They didn't, you know, they should have scored more than 7 points, but that defense just couldn't stop the Eagles offense. And Minnesota's defense is far better than New England's. So I thought Philly would move the ball some. But, you know, Nick Foles, the difference between his first three games, let's say, and the last couple was just, it was kind of in the second half, I think, probably of that Atlanta game. It was impressive. And he's, you know, the throw to Corey Clement in the end zone, I'll never pronounce his name properly. sorry, Corey, was a perfect pass. You know, he ripped in a slant in the fourth quarter, I think, on the final drive in between two people.
Aguilar, right?
Yeah, these were not, you know, a screen pass and the guy takes it 50 yards. They were great throws. He totally deserved the MVP. He played fantastic. Is there a controversy in Philly starting QB? No. But
how about the Clement touchdown that was, ball seemed to be moving.
Yeah, that one, I thought of the two, Zach Ertz was for sure a touchdown.
For sure.
Didn't
he was a
think
runner.
There was any debate. The other one, I could see it both ways. To me, I thought he had it then established with 2 feet, and then with his third foot, he bobbled, and his third foot was out of bounds.
Well, that's the thing. Like, the ball moves when you go frame by frame.
Right.
Right? So
I think if I'm looking at, you know, again,
call stands,
they're
going to
they're going to have a new catch rule. That's one of the things Goodell said at the State of the Union. I know Schefter was hammering him on NFL Live. They'll figure it out. In the kind of quote-unquote common sense, you're at the bar, that looked like a catch, and then a bobble afterwards. I would have called both. The Ertz one was no doubt, and that other one I thought still should have been a touchdown.
I'm just so psyched about where this game is headed as a football fan. You know me, I just yell about timeouts and game theory and all that stuff. Doug Peterson, I hosted radio last Saturday with Myron Metcalf, and I said, look, man, I don't want to get hot take central here, but if Peterson pulls this off, this could be like a Hall of Fame path for him, much like Sean Payton, right? Sean Payton won that Super Bowl as sort of an offensive genius. And if he does this against Belichick, that means Foles is going to play well. They're going to put up points. And Peterson has all the makings of a great coach and offensive mind because of what I've already seen with him and Wentz. Like, this could be a Hall of Fame path that he's on. And I think I'm right in that. At least it's a start of something because, and Van Pelt had Nick Foles on SportsCenter last night and asked him, like, hey, like, what we saw that Oakland game and what happened between that and then, you know, the playoffs where you kind of took off. And he said, during that bye week, Peterson sat me down. We went through old footage and figured out what was my strengths. And they tweaked the playbook and ran those types of plays. Gee, what a novel concept. Playing to what you have. Like, I always say Greg Popovich has done a fantastic job because he won with the rock fights with the Pistons back in the day. And those games that were in the 70s and 80s. And then he had this fluidity, beautiful offense as the NBA shifted to the three-point ball, and he figured it out. And that last title he had against the Heat was some of the best basketball I've ever seen offensively. And that's what you have to do as a coach. And I just love what Peterson did. He stayed aggressive, went for it on fourth down in the 6 minutes to go instead of punting. Frankly, like, no team was stopping each other. And we've seen a shift like this, whether it be Saban switching quarterbacks at halftime, and then like a guy like Sean Payton going for it on fourth down against Carolina instead of punting. Now, I still would have punted, but just the concept of being aggressive, going to win the game, instead of just being so archaic and doing stuff to, like, not get yelled at or just stay close. It's refreshing to see these coaches. I think they're starting to figure it out.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say to me, it's reminiscent almost as a coaching job of Joe Flacco's run as a QB for that Baltimore Ravens, whether that 2011, 2012.
2012 season 13 Super Bowl.
Yeah, when they won the Super Bowl, where he was just excellent. Now, were there a couple small things you could nitpick that Doug Peterson did? Sure. But he was nearly perfect. And look, I'm obviously biased as a Vikings fan, but nobody did that to their defense the entire season. They were fantastic. They were fantastic against the Patriots. And to your point, I think you saw the difference with Doug Peterson and the Eagles with, I know it's a cliche, but playing to win as opposed to playing not to lose. And I think the biggest example of that was the second half with the Jaguars, where they were playing not to lose the game.
Or the end of the first half.
Or the end of the first
half. Two timeouts, 55 seconds to go. You only need 35 yards for a field goal.
Exactly. The Patriots are too good. They're going to come back and win unless you keep your foot on the gas the entire game. Jaguars did not, and they did not trust Blake Bortles or whatever with the play calling. Eagles did, and there was
Now, in the Jaguars' defense, they had a 3rd and 18. If they stop them, they probably win that game. But that at least had a different feel of a game because they were stopping the Patriots at time. Their calling card was defense. Now, in this game, no one's punting. So field position doesn't matter as much as possession. So that's why on their own 45 or whatever it was, 4th and 1, 6 minutes to go, you have all 3 timeouts, you still went for it instead of kicking it and putting the ball in Brady's hands, who's already torched you. By the way, Brady over 500 yards passing, 13-1 payout, because it was like you could nail it in like 10-yard increments or 500 plus. And I saw that. I was like, that's not bad. But anyways, back to this. It just was a, you know, we talked about in the pod, and Dan Z, shout out to one of our radio producers. He thinks, you know, as much as these top-tier quarterbacks are awesome, it's a lot of it's just offensive scheme and competent coaching, and Peterson showed that. Obviously, Carson Wentz was great, but then you give him Nick Foles. Obviously, he had to kind of regroup, bring in the oars a little bit, and tweak some things. But do what your guy, like as they said, he told him to be Nick. Just be Nick, and that's what he was. And it's just awesome to see a lot of other coaches, because I know guys like Belichick and some of the other higher-profile coaches just sort of allow their opponents to shoot themselves in the foot first. And so many times teams have done that, just idiotic play calling or whatever. And this time, the Eagles did all the right things, and it's still a coin flip game. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, and I think to me, you know, look, I will make no bones about it. I am far from a Patriots fan. I was rooting for the Eagles. But I think any Patriots fan would also agree all of their Super Bowls have been close to 50-50. There haven't been any 49ers Chargers blowouts where the game was over in the third quarter.
Right.
So it was nice in a karmic sense, I think, for a 50-50 game to not go their way once. That was all. You know, they had plenty. You could make an argument they could have won
The Giants ones
for
were
sure.
shaky.
But you have the Seahawks game. You have other ones that were also, you know, right. Carolina
Seahawks,
kicks
and
the
last
ball.
Year, and last year.
Right. Carolina kicks the ball out of bounds, so they get at the 40. They're just things that, you know, the Patriots won the game, but they're external factors. So
look, here's the recipe for success for the Patriots. You beat up on an awful division, right? The Jets, Dolphins, Bills. Yes, there's been 1 or 2 years where those teams were good, like the Rex Ryan's Jets teams. But for the most part, Patriots have racked up wins against their division. They get a home field. Like, they have never gone to the Super Bowl when they didn't have a bye. So they get the 1 or the 2 seed. Second round, they beat up on a mediocre team like this year, the Titans at home. Then have to go beat a good AFC team and then go beat a good NFC team. You have to win 2 games, essentially, after running the table, so to speak, in your conference and division because you have an awesome quarterback and an awesome head coach. So I'm not dismissing that, but that's basically what it is that the Patriots have been doing all these years.
Yeah, and I think, you know.
Now, it takes a great team to do that.
Totally.
But that's basically what they've been doing.
Yeah, and you know, we'll get into it with the futures odds. It will be interesting. The AFC, all of a sudden, you have the Texans, Deshaun Watson. You have the Jaguars, who arguably could have won, you know, this year and will be formidable. Colts, Andrew Luck is coming back. You have the Raiders, who were not very good this year. The Chargers. There are other teams, certainly. The Steelers always be there. That I think the competition will be more than it has been. This year really seemed like, for the most part, it was Patriots, I guess Jaguars, and Steelers in the AFC.
I still think the Patriots division stinks. So they're going to dominate. I mean, you can just pencil in at least 12 wins for the Pats next year, maybe even 14. Going back to the game theory thing with Peterson, I'm fascinated to see what's going to happen with John Gruden. Because here's a guy who's old school, hasn't coached in so long, and the game has changed, right? It's very offensive friendly, and some of these decisions are going to be different. And I haven't read the article, but I believe the Eagles had a guy who's like a 27-year-old whiz kid MIT guy helping them with game decisions and math and some of that stuff. So something to keep in mind as these teams move forward. I wonder if we're going to see sort of this figuring out of computing and analytics for in-game decisions, not just, you know, like the Browns are doing with some of their free agents and draft decisions.
Yeah, I think Gruden is fascinating as well because he's almost in the perfect spot you would want to be for a head coach coming back into the league who hasn't been coaching, which is that he was on Monday Night Football, so he's traveling, he's talking to all these other coaches, he's talking to all the players, he's doing the draft, so he knows kind of a little bit about some of the best guys. He's doing the QB camps, so he knows kind of the strengths and the weaknesses of the incoming QBs. Now, again, you're not playing all of them, I understand, but he's been very much close to the game.
Right. And
now,
the game has changed. At least gleaning wisdom, too.
Exactly.
Because I would think some of these teams, maybe 3 years into broadcasting Monday Night Football, their guard's still up. But after a while, at some point, they probably thought Gruden was never coming back.
Yeah.
So they've dropped their guard a little bit on that front. And I think just in general, football is such a sharing of information within reason. And so it's a fascinating concept in and of itself.
And look, I think you look for people who, is the game more fun with person X in this game? The answer is yes with John Gruden.
And we'll have to discuss better X coming up. So let's get to it. Time now to go out to Las Vegas and put a bow on the football season with our good buddy John Murray, Westgate Las Vegas Superbook manager and odds maker. John, how are you?
Doing pretty good, guys. I'm feeling very relieved that football is finally over. How do you guys feel about that?
Sad. Sad, but we also don't have to grind in a sports book sometimes.
I was going to say, can you pay the rent, Murray? It looked like a rough Super Bowl out there from the numbers we saw.
Well, we'll be okay, Ben. We did manage to scratch out a small profit overall, mostly because, I know I mentioned this last week, guys, we were in such an excellent position in the future book on both teams that it would have been very hard for us to not make money on Sunday, but we came pretty darn close. It was about as bad of a result as we could have had on Sunday.
Yeah, we talked about it. Oh, sorry. We talked about it in the open about the how futures affect the Super Bowl handle grade, but not going to shed a tear because you guys did well in the college football playoff, and then you also this postseason favorites just covered once.
We did, you know, and Ben actually texted me this morning, Doug. He said he thought if we recapped all the losses, it would kind of humanize us. And I said, that's my biggest fear. I want us to be viewed as like the guys, like the Wizard of Oz, you know, and the golden gods that never make a mistake. I don't want us to be humanized in any way.
No, we're going behind the curtain here. That's the purpose of behind the bets.
Okay. I mean, I just want to know that I'm doing it under protest. I want that on the record.
Okay. Good to know.
Duly noted.
We'll run that up the flagpole. So let's just go in chronological order. Since we last spoke on the previous podcast, it was Thursday afternoon, and we, you know, everyone's sort of projecting and anticipating certain action heading into the weekend when the tourists arrive. What did we see the rest of the way in terms of big bets and even the prop action?
Well, you know, my biggest surprise really was that we didn't write nearly as much Philadelphia money line as I thought we would. Usually in the Super Bowl, you always see a ton of dog money line. We were really riding mostly point spread bets on the Eagles all the way up until about 3 hours before kickoff. We did have a guy come in, bet $175,000 on the Eagles at +170. So that was, you know, certainly that's a very large bet. But the accumulation of tickets on the Eagles money line wasn't nearly what I expected it to be or what any of us expected it to be. Usually that's such a popular option on the Super Bowl. Other than that guy's bet, we did have a 100K parlay of Patriots money line to the over from one of our really well-known house players. And we just had a lot of Patriots minus the point bets. One thing I noticed on Saturday that I found really interesting was a lot of people were buying Philadelphia up to +5, -120, buying them up from 4.5 to 5. And I thought that was so peculiar. And I was talking to a friend of mine, like, when did 5 become a key number in the NFL?
It didn't.
And he referenced Ben's Vikings win over the Saints. That game landed 5. So I don't know if maybe that was a reason why people were doing that, but we took a lot of bets.
No, I just don't think they really understand the finances of it all. But you know what?
I give the people the benefit of the doubt, Doug. You know me.
Right, but there was a chance it would land 5.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
A couple times in the second half.
I was going to say, Murray, when we had spoken, I think you guys were at New England -4, and your prediction was basically it was not going to go down 3.5, would go up, and you didn't think it was necessarily going to go up that much more. How did that compare, I guess, to your expectations? You guys were in between 4.5 and 4, I believe, and then were down New England 4, I think, for the game time. How did that kind of compare in terms of the amount of Patriots money coming in and what you thought might happen?
Well, I guess I thought there would have been a little bit more Patriots money, Ben, but we did have, like I said, we had all these guys betting Philadelphia +5, and then we had the big money line bet that came in a few hours before kickoff. So really the line kind of stayed between 4 and 4.5 the whole way. There wasn't a whole lot of movement. We did move the total up a little bit from when we all spoke last week to what we closed at. I think we closed 49.5, and that was because just the money kept pouring in on the over all weekend and right up until kickoff.
So that was mostly public. That's one where the public influenced it rather than a couple sharp guys.
Well, the public usually likes to bet on the over in the Super Bowl. I mean, they always do, and they certainly were rewarded this year because we had a fairly high-scoring game, if you guys heard.
Yeah, that one cashed pretty early.
So let's.
They exchanged field goals, I think, the first two drives, and then all hell just broke loose, basically.
Let's talk about that and with the flavor of prop bets, because, you know, we talk about it all the time. We've written about it. People don't go to Vegas to lay no overtime and lay the big wood of -900. They like to see things happen.
Although Barnwell did.
Barnwell.
And would've won. And would have won.
Yeah. So. I don't know if Barnwell's going to be invited back on the pod. He gave a lot of. Of course, one interception in the game,
did,
and sure enough,
he did tweet at me. Yes.
No, he obviously did a great job, and we used his. We used his analysis for the over bets on like Brady and things like that in terms of the up tempo, which is exactly what the Patriots did. But it is funny, like the fluke interception, Daron Harmon, and I was just obviously laughing to myself, and that's what happens. That's what happens in a small sample size of one pod giving out some bets. But so obviously this was a clear disaster for the books in terms of prop bets.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, you're talking about there were 9 touchdowns scored in the game by, I think, 8 different players. And we had a yes-no option on every one of them except for Corey Clement. So, and then 2 of those guys, James White and LeGarrette Blount, we had an option on would they score a touchdown in the first half. So when those 2 guys scored their touchdowns, it was just disastrous for us because we got crushed on the touchdown and the first half touchdown. And then the real killer was Nick Foles scoring a touchdown at 8-1. I think that was the prop we lost the most money on of the whole game. But if you have that many different players score a touchdown, you're not going to do very well in those yes-nos.
Yeah, and just a reminder to everyone that the props account for everyone I talked to, a little over 50% of the handle, because the popularity of the proposition bets continues to grow. And let's think about that. If you're having $1 million bets on the sides and you're offsetting that with the volume of prop bets, you could just imagine what the finances are, because again, people are going there and getting 3-1 on no extra point, or excuse me, missed extra point, 8-1 and things like that. And yes, you're going to have some stupid bets on exactly 4 points by one of the teams. But for the most part, there's a multiplier on a lot of these risk bets, and that's why the books are hurting after the Super Bowl.
Well, you're right, Doug, but think about it this way. I read that it was the most yards ever in any NFL game
any
ever.
Game, not playoff game, and, not Super Bowl game.
Correct.
And this happened in the Super Bowl when we offered more prop bets than we ever have on any game before. So, you know, you can do the math. I was joking this morning with Jeff Sherman about how if there had been a result like this on, let's just say, a Monday night football game, he and I would have come into the book on Tuesday morning and laughed and gone, man, thank God that didn't happen in a Super Bowl because we would have gotten killed. And it did happen in a Super Bowl, and you can imagine that the results were not too favorable.
And just to highlight this, there was an over-under on total yards in the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, I think we closed like 733.5, and it just barely managed to go over. It went like 1,100 some.
Yeah, 11. So like over 1.5 times.
Yeah, it got over there just a little bit. It was just one of those things where anything that could have happened went wrong. Like one of our biggest decisions was, would Brandon Cooks have a rush attempt? This guy got knocked out of the game early in the second quarter, but he did manage to get a rushing attempt in before he got knocked out of the game. It was just that kind of a day for us.
An exciting rush attempt with the hurdle. Almost got in the red zone there. It was
He had a little Reggie Bush 2006 Rose Bowl going on in Brandon Cooks of trying to do a little too much where he probably had the angle in the first down and went for the hurdle.
Yeah, he did. That was funny, actually. That was a good tackle, really, by that guy. One thing Ed thought was funny is we actually needed over number of players by Philadelphia with a pass reception. We booked it to need the over. Nick Foles caught a pass, and it still went under. I mean, how is that even possible?
Yeah. No, I was just going to – just looking here, I mean, total receiving yards by Danny Amendola, 52.5, over. Rob Gronkowski, 72.5, over. Philip Dorsett, 6.5, over. Chris Hogan, 35.5, over. Pretty much anyone except Brandon Cooks over.
And Deion Lewis had zero catches. Other than that, it was just like everybody went over everything. Everybody scored a touchdown. It was certainly an exciting game, but it was not a great one from the perspective of the house, obviously. But no one is going to feel too bad for us, guys, and we'll be just fine.
Well, and one to hit on, since I had hit on it last week and thought it was interesting, the penalties, one I'm assuming you guys won on because you had the Patriots 5.5 penalties. They had one. And the Eagles, I believe, 6.5 penalties. They had 6. So the under cashed on both of those.
Yeah, I think we lost, though, because Philadelphia had more penalties than New England. I think that was a prop that we lost on.
It was. There was one directly competing, yes.
Ben, I'm always going to try to put the negative spin on everything.
I can see that, yeah.
And then I bet Gene Steratore under 2.5 times smiling on camera during the game, and I lost that one right early in the first quarter. So that was a tough one.
That was a special one, behind the glass special.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I don't know what was Gene Steratore smiling about during that game. He seemed like he was having a very good time.
Joe Buck had the line. I think it was during the conference title game, one of the playoff games, and he goes, Steratore always looks like he just heard a great joke.
Yeah.
And can't share it with you because it's a little too off color or something like that. And I was just like, you know, he absolutely does. He just got this smirk. He's having trouble bearing. And then obviously, then he starts to talk and it's not a joke. It's a penalty, which sometimes can be construed as a joke. But, it is crazy how everything, like fourth down attempts, 2-point conversion attempts. I mean, the Super Bowl parties with the squares were off the charts given these missed PATs. I mean, each team missed a PAT, and you have these quirky numbers that usually never land, twos landing in the Super Bowl party. So a lot of fun in that regard. What was the atmosphere in the sports book? I mean, I would imagine it's similar, but any specific stories you can relate? I know you were grading props, though.
Yeah, I was hiding in the back behind that curtain that Ben referenced earlier. But no, I could see out into the crowd. The crowd was very rowdy. I mean, they were certainly enjoying themselves. And I think sometimes there was like a delayed reaction, a delayed cheer while the people were processing just how many prop bets they'd won on the play that had just happened. So sometimes the reactions were a little delayed. But certainly it was a very exciting game. And the crowd was having a very good time out there.
Well, one thing also hitting on, so the Eagles go up early. They're up 22-12 at halftime.
Yeah.
What did you guys have? Was the halftime spread New England -7? Is that what I saw?
It was, and Ben, thank you for bringing up something we did win on.
Something
that
positive.
That's an act of charity from you, Ben. Yes, it was. It was New England was -7 in the second half, and we did write some pretty substantial money on the Patriots' second half. Philadelphia covering that second half, they lost the second half 21-19, and by covering the second half, they did save us quite a bit, and that combined with what we won on Philadelphia in the Super Bowl future book was what really enabled us to come out of the day ahead, a disappointing amount, but we did make money for the day, and a lot of that was because of the second half, Ben.
How was the live handle for you guys during the game?
It was good. It was down a little bit from last year, but we had a good ride on the in-game. We took a very small loss. It wasn't not too much to report, but it was a good ride, not quite as much as a year ago. But, of course, a year ago, we would have been better off not doing any in-game because everybody bet on the Patriots to rally, and you all saw what happened there.
I mean, let's not forget, this game obviously could have gone to the Patriots, 4th-and-1 on their own 45-ish. Foles flushed from the pocket, completes a pass to Ertz. I mean, you're looking at maybe a push or even a cover at that point because there was, what, 6 minutes to go? And, you know, yeah. Brady and given the tackling and the offense, I mean, might even come to a point where the Eagles would have had to let the Patriots score. I mean, I'm not saying it was likely, but, you know, you get down to the 11-yard line and it's first and, you know, a minute and a half, 2 minutes or whatever it is, you let them score to go down eight. So it could have been really adventurous for the point spread hijinks, but
true.
I was surprised that you did not get a heavy dose of Patriots money line, at least from like celebrities or someone like that. It was surprising that all the reports, at least, that it was heavy on the Eagles money line.
Yeah, we had some pretty good two-way money line on it, Doug, but we did have a little bit more Eagles money line. I just thought it was going to be even more than it was, I guess, is the best way to put it. I thought it was going to be an accumulation of public tickets on the Eagles money line.
Yeah, I think we had, I believe, 5 reported million-dollar bets or accumulation of, you know, 700,000 plus 500,000. So $5 million bets. Last year's Super Bowl, we had 1.
Really?
Wow.
I just
only
feel like
one.
There's more. Huh?
And I think Mayweather-McGregor was 7 or 8. Somewhere in there,
right?
At least 6.
Just wait. Wait until this summer when they do Mayweather McGregor Part 2. Maybe we'll have even more million-dollar bets.
That could be an adventure. Anything else? Whether we're talking props, how about the future market? Well, we can get. Let's put a bow on the props in this Super Bowl.
Another one. Ones we lost on or ones we won on?
Anything?
Just want more? Just more negatives. No, another one we did take a pretty big loss on, though, guys, was will there be a lead change in the fourth quarter? And we, of course, that was a yes. Everybody bet the yes, and we lost on that. And then we mentioned it last week, or I mentioned it last week, we did have a pretty substantial bet, Nick Foles over 1 touchdown pass. And Foles threw a touchdown in the first quarter, so that guy was free-rolling the rest of the way, and he was able to get the win. One thing that did save us a lot, Nick Foles to win the MVP. That was an excellent result for our house, and because we had, I mentioned last week, or I think I did when I spoke with you, Ben, that we were writing money mostly on just long shots, and we weren't writing anything on either quarterback. We had a flood of money come in on Tom Brady on Saturday and Sunday. Never really wrote anything on Nick Foles. So Nick Foles winning the MVP was very welcome news for us.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that one, and also the first touchdown prop, which is always kind of a favorite of people, Alshon Jeffrey cashing. Yeah. I think he opened at 8-1. I'm not sure what he closed at. How did you guys do on that?
We did very well. And I was going to mention Clement. I mentioned, I think when I spoke with you, Ben, that we were in a bad position on him to score the first touchdown. We had a guy come in on Saturday, bet him to score the first Eagles touchdown at 15-1. So if he had scored the first touchdown, we would have gotten beat pretty bad there. Jeffrey was really one of our better possibilities. So we did okay on that one.
So I saw some random ones, and I, you know, because when you do interviews and you want to have some talking points, and the one that got me, it wasn't that extreme of a randomness, but the margin of Tulane basketball game, I believe Temple and Tulane were playing, versus the cross sport reference to Trey Burton's receiving yards. I mean, what kind of handle are you getting on something like that?
The honest truth is, on most of those, we don't write a whole lot of money. I mean, there's a couple of them where we do write some money. They're fun. People like talking about them. But compared to the more like meat and potatoes props, like Tom Brady passing yards, stuff like that, the handle is pretty minimal on those.
Okay. That's what I would assume, because for people to find these things and have the patience to go through the packet, now I know they have about 10 days to do it. It just seems kind of strange that someone would walk up to the window and pick that. Whereas you can put that money on a bigger payouts, more fun game sort of associated, because who wants to watch the Tulane Temple game? Things like that.
I also like the shortest touchdown, 1.5. Also, there was a 1-yard touchdown.
The fourth down.
Yep.
The Philly
you know
special.
What? One of the things I thought was very interesting, guys, was we had, I think, 74 total points in that game. Neither team scored 3 straight times. Remarkable when you consider how many scores there were in the game. It's very difficult for there to not be a sequence of 3 straight scores by one of the two teams. For that to happen is pretty remarkable.
Yeah. Speaking of remarkable, we can't have a podcast without talking about Better X,
the
man taking all your money. Of course, you named him, so he is a monster of your creating.
Yeah, well, you know, he never surfaced at the Westgate this week. We never saw him in our book, as far as I know, and he didn't place any wagers with us, but he certainly did quite a bit of damage around town from what I heard.
So, I guess, obviously, you know, we're here in Connecticut. I guess Doug was there in Minneapolis for a couple of days, but we're not on the ground. I mean, you know, you guys are going out to local watering holes and speaking to other bookmakers. What's kind of the, you know, sense among people with this guy, and mostly less so the guy, with just kind of the story? Because I don't think people really have a sense of how rare it is that somebody bets this much money, bets it across different books, and then also wins on the World Series, comes back, and then puts it all again on the underdog too. And I feel like it'd also be a different story if he was betting on the Patriots. Also, if he was hedging at all. It didn't seem like, from any reporting we've had so far, that he was, you know, hedging on the Patriots or player props. Again, we don't fully know, but certainly no big bets, and there's no way he could have made up a big amount of hedge, as we kind of discussed last week on in-game wagering with the Patriots. So what's kind of the, I don't know, mood out there or discussion around him?
Well, I don't know who you're talking about going to these local watering holes, Ben. That's
bookmakers not working as hard as you.
Some of my colleagues.
Yes.
You know, I'll put it this way. This wouldn't be getting the kind of attention it has been getting in the media if it wasn't extremely rare, Ben. I mean, for a guy to just come in and be willing to bet, you know, or asking to bet millions and millions of dollars on an underdog on the money line is highly unusual. And he's won his last six bets by my count, and that's even more unusual. So it's a very rare situation, and not really something I've ever seen before, in terms of the dollar amounts.
What conversations are you having with other reputable people like yourself in the industry about,
of course, very
curtailing
reputable,
this damage? Or is this a keep it coming, more the merrier, eventually this will go away?
Well, you know, I can't tell anybody else in this town how to do their job, but I know that when he won the first, I think, three games that he bet in the World Series, and the fourth time he came in, we gave him a good sized bet, but we didn't give him as much as he asked for, because we saw that he kept winning, and we felt like we could get the information we needed, which is what side this guy was on, without really extending him huge limits. And that saved us a lot of money in the World Series, because he obviously did very well. And, you know, it probably saved us money in the Super Bowl, because he didn't come back here and beat us up on that game.
So one question I've gotten from people is, why don't the books take, you know, let's say he walks in, he wants to take $5 million on the Eagles. Why are you not letting him, not necessarily the Westgate, but let's say MGM or William Hill or somewhere else? Why are they not just taking one singular $5 million bet? Why do they want to make him, let's say, have five separate million-dollar bets?
My guess is, and obviously I don't work there, but my guess is that they're knocking the price down on each bet. And if he's willing to take plus 150 for the last million and plus 155 for another million, they're not going to give him the whole thing at plus 170, for instance. That would be my guess, that they're knocking the price down a little bit and putting themselves in a better position to sell back whatever it is that they want to sell back.
And especially because they didn't get the million-dollar bets on the other side, so they were liable in this regard. And that's how books maneuver, because they have a bottom line. And what conversations were had with your upper management about this fine gentleman, at least ahead of time or maybe in reaction to the run he did in the World Series?
All that I've really, you know, that I've been privy to so far has just been the people upstairs above all of us basically asking, has he bet yet? Or, you know, during the week leading up to the game. And we just told them no. So that was really all we didn't really discuss, like, what are we going to do when he comes in? I mean, we had, those of us that work in this end of the bookmaking, we had discussed what we would give him. But we didn't really talk to upper management about that. They just were keeping tabs, trying to know if he had bet or not. That was it. They weren't giving our team directives on, like, don't let him bet more than this or that. It wasn't anything like that.
I was just going to say, the all-important question, we know there's a strict drink ticket limit.
Yes.
He comes in, he's betting, you know, whatever. Let's call it 50K, 100K.
Mm-hmm.
Is he only getting two drink tickets?
Yeah, just two. It's two. Ben, it's two per trip to the window. If I start breaking the rules for one guy, I got to break the rules for everybody.
That's a great point.
Absolutely not. Absolutely. And Ben, I take everything very seriously. I don't mess around at all, bud.
You run a tight ship there at the Westgate.
Spin it forward. Next year's Super Bowl, obviously a lot of question marks. Sure. Patriots have some movement on their coaching staff. There's always the giant question mark with Brady, Belichick, and even now Gronk in the mix, but you still have the Pats as the overall favorite.
Yeah, we got the Patriots as the 5-1 favorite, Doug. And I don't know how you could say any other team should be the favorite over New England. I know there's a lot of turnover with their coaching staff. I'm pretty sure that Belichick will be able to figure it out, though. I mean, this is a guy who's lost coaches over the years, and he's always seemed to be fine the next season anyway. And do you think the Lions had any regrets watching Matt Patricia give up all those points on Sunday afternoon?
I know Patriots fans were not exactly complaining when he got announced even a couple weeks ago before this Super Bowl performance. And
got the Philadelphia. Philadelphia is the Philadelphia is the favorite in the NFC right now. They're 7-2 to win the NFC. They've got the lowest odds to win the Super Bowl of any of the NFC teams. You got to think they're going to get Carson Wentz back next year, and I don't think you can say enough about the job Doug Peterson did this year and during this postseason. Seems like blasphemy, but he really outcoached Belichick and the Patriots on Sunday, and he was awesome all season.
Yeah, I mean,
disagreement.
Yeah, as a Vikings fan, I couldn't have been more impressed with what they did in the championship game and then in the Super Bowl.
Are you guys surprised at all that it doesn't seem like any of the NFL teams that had a job opening considered Frank Reich, the Eagles offensive coordinator? I'd give him a lot of credit for their success as well.
I agree. I talked about it in the open. I said, I think we finally are seeing a shift in these coaches. They figured it out. They finally realized being aggressive and doing things in possession matters more than it once did. And we saw it I thought it was a horrible call in the second quarter to go for two. That made zero sense. Outside of that, Peterson was fantastic, and look, possession matters. You're not going to punt the ball to Brady. 4th and 1, what I always talk about. What does the defense want you to do? They want you to punt, so you go for it. And you obviously have the right personnel. Again, and if it's a 13-10 game, possession and field position are almost comparable. So, you punt, but it's just remarkable with these knuckleheads. But I think we've seen enough, whether it be Saban in the championship game, not to get into it and what I did in the open, but Saban in the championship game, pulling the quarterback, and these coaches, for so long, they've been all about extending the game or avoiding criticism, and now they're actually trying to win the game, which is what you have to do against Belichick.
You can't punt on that 4th and 1. How many times did Philadelphia's defense force a punt in the entire game?
Zero.
Right.
That would be zero.
Zero.
So how do you punt the ball? New England had the ball. Their first three possessions of the second half were touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. So Philadelphia had to go for that 4th and 1. They didn't have any other choice. I don't actually listen to the announcers when I'm at work, but I heard that Al Michaels was calling for a punt there. Is that actually true?
I don't know. I don't recall. But
if that tells you a lot about about Al Michaels.
Moral of the story is you have the Eagles as the favorite. Carson Wentz coming back. We think by week one, but more so Peterson, and then they obviously seem like the team to beat.
And we have Pittsburgh at 7-1, and we actually wrote some money on Pittsburgh to win the conference on Monday morning. A guy came in and bet the Steelers to win the AFC at 4-1 for a pretty substantial amount. So Pittsburgh is a team that we're always going to see. Yeah, well, he had a pretty big bet on Philadelphia on Sunday, so he should be okay for the next year or so. But
he's a fan of the Keystone State, I see.
But we had some pretty substantial money come in on Pittsburgh, and the Monday after the Super Bowl, that's always a really great day for future book handle, because you've got a lot of people that are here for the weekend. They're cashing their tickets from Sunday, and they're going to put in a few future bets before they skip town. And we saw a lot of big money come in a number of our different future books, not just in the NFL.
All right, so I've been saving up a couple questions, so I'll go rapid fire. Number one, with the Patriots, would they still be the favorite if, let's say, hypothetically, Bill Belichick is not their coach? Tom Brady is their quarterback. Bill Belichick is not their coach.
Well, who's the coach? Who's the next coach?
It's not McDaniels. Really, it's not McDaniels.
I'm not sure. Tom Coughlin.
I would say, in my mind, no. In my mind, I mean, it's great. Brady's one of the best quarterbacks in the history of the NFL, but I've always felt that the Patriots' success was more about Belichick. And in my opinion, no, I would no longer have the Patriots the favorite.
So theoretically, the Steelers or Eagles would take over that.
I think so.
Gotcha.
In my mind, yeah.
Got it. Number two, Kirk Cousins, still out there. Mm-hmm. How big of an impact does he make? For example, the Browns are 100-1. Are they then 80-1 with him, 60-1 with him? Not that big a difference?
You'd have to knock a team like the Browns down a little bit if they had a competent quarterback. I'd probably knock them down into like the 60-80 range if they got Cousins. Cousins, I don't think he's an elite player, as you guys know that, but he would make a very big difference. He'd give them competent quarterback play, and that's something that they were really lacking last season. The Browns have a lot of talent.
Yeah, and then the third one was the San Francisco 49ers, 20-1. Is that essentially just, we know people are going to bet it at 20-1, so why are we offering it at what the true odds should be, which are, you know, I don't know, 40-50-1?
We did have in 20. We knocked them up a little bit to 25 in response to some of the bets we saw come in over the weekend on other teams. But I do – what you just said, Ben, is exactly what I think. I think it's just a – we know that money's going to come in on the 49ers. We know they're going to be a very trendy team after the way they closed the season. So, yeah, that number is probably a little bit lower than it should be right now.
Hey, that's why business is good.
Right. You know how to read the public. Well, Murray, it's been a fun ride this football season. We appreciate your flexibility on the scheduling, your patience with us, and obviously the contributions to our listeners.
Oh, I appreciate it, guys. It was a lot of fun talking about the NFL all season with the two of you guys.
And I'm assuming you're taking like a month-long vacation now before March Madness.
Well, Ed actually is leaving, I think, on a vacation tomorrow, so somebody's going to have to be here to watch the shop. I think that's what he said. He's still wearing that mask, so it's hard
that's
to...
That's what understand. I was going to ask.
I did start a rumor that he shed a single tear after they won the Super Bowl, but I'll never be able to confirm that because he was wearing that dog mask.
Yeah, there was a tweet going around.
It was a great Photoshop.
On Super Bowl.
Or not Photoshop job, but it was excellent.
Oh. I'll never reveal whether that picture was real or not, guys. I cannot do that.
Well, thank you again. Our condolences to the sportsbook industry. I'm sure the public will find a way to give it back. Although, Cavs laying 6.5 on the road tonight. They've been fade central over there.
Doug, you know what was funny? We actually won more money yesterday than we did on the Super Bowl Sunday because we had some big money come in on Louisville from one of our house players, and that tells you a lot about how good Monday was, but it tells you even more about how disappointing Sunday was.
Well, eventually they're going to give it back. It's just how it is. All right, man. Well, we'll reconnect down the road as we figure out our podcast format and future moving forward.
Okay, guys. I'll talk to you guys soon.
All right. Thanks, man.
Time now for a quick break. But on the other side, we welcome in David Purdom, who obviously does a fantastic job covering sports betting and all things gambling for us here at ESPN and ESPN.com. Time now to bring in David Purdom, who's been working tirelessly covering everything and continues to do so. But obviously, Super Bowl coming to a climax here with all your coverage and articles and the postmortem as well for these sports books. David, good to chat, man.
You too, guys.
All right, so the numbers are in, and you know, you and I had a friendly text gentleman's bet on whether they'd win or lose, and you said slight loser. That was your projection, but you're actually right because of these darn future bets are graded into the Super Bowl handle. So yes, they won the smallest percentage ever, but for the actual game, they lost.
Yeah, if you were to just look at the bets on the game, they probably came out with a red figure there. But the Nevada Gaming Control counts in the futures bets. Futures are, you know, the odds to win the Super Bowl. And so obviously, whoever wins those Super Bowl, those are when those bets are culminated. So those are added in there. It was still a very, very small win, $1.1 million. I say that sounds kind of ridiculous, that small, but it's one of the smaller wins they've had since 2011. And the handle is just really, really massive, $158 million, shattering the all-time record for the amount bet on the Super Bowl by more than $20 million. So you can see that much was bet. They only won that little tiny amount. So it was not the best case scenario for the books, to say the least.
And you had mentioned that you were in Vegas as well, had been going around to a bunch of books. What were they basically, you know, the props? Obviously, every book is different, and generally the public likes to bet things to happen, so they're going to bet the over, which is why the props did not go well for them. But in terms of the game, what were they rooting for in terms of the side and the total, most of the books you spoke to?
Every book I spoke to leading up within like 30 minutes of kickoff, the best case scenario was a Patriots win and the game to stay under the total. Obviously, they got the exact opposite, Eagles, and the game soared over the total. So that was not good. The books did be able to make up some money at halftime. They posted the Patriots as a 7-point favorite and attracted a lot of money. A lot of the guys, MGM included, said that that really kind of saved us. They got this big influx of people that, you know, probably had already bet on the Patriots. Like, well, they're going to come back. We should go for it. And they bet -7, and that didn't happen. So they made up some money there, weren't able to kind of get off some of that liability. But still, you know, it was not the best case scenario, as we mentioned. I think I only know of two or three books that said that they posted an actual profit on the game. Westgate, MGM, and then Caesars. Caesars had a really good Super Bowl. They reported a 7-figure win. They say they were able to avoid some of the big Eagles money line bets that were around, and they got some big Patriots money line bets right before kickoff. So Caesars had a good day. Everybody else, not so much.
Yeah, it's one of the things we talk about as well, is kind of looking at the, if you don't like the game, think about betting the second half. The Eagles were up 10, the line -7, which means kind of the adjusted game lines, Patriots +3, whereas before the game it was Patriots -4, -4.5. So if you think the Patriots are going to win and you still thought that at halftime, you have a much better line than you originally had before the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And the books do use that to kind of try to hedge off their any liability that they're facing. So halftime bets, in-game wagers, they can use that all the time to kind of help themselves out.
So you mentioned the $158.58 million. Some of that was from Mr. Better X, or just Better X. We'll call him Better X.
Yeah.
The professor. You were out there. We had asked Murray this before. What, I guess, we'll get into, you know, a little more about him, but what kind of have bookmakers you've spoken with, what are their thoughts on this? It's obviously a rare situation. Is there concern? Do they think this is just a one-time thing and it will go away? Obviously, you know, he is far, far below the $158 million, but they're not used to taking big hits like that, and now in two straight big events with the World Series and the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they're not. There were several guys that had taken bets from Better X, some of his big action, which was all on the Eagles and all on the money line, and they were just kind of scratching their heads. How is this guy continuing to beat us? One book said he's 7-0 at their shop. Another book, I think, said that he'd won a bunch of UFC, and they don't remember the last time he'd lost. So they're kind of trying to figure out, does this guy have some sort of formula, some sort of edge, or is this just a dumb run of luck? And I got to side with the latter there. I mean, it just seems like he's just hot. He's just kind of getting lucky. He's willing to bet prices that aren't the best of the number by far. He'll bet a little bit, and then they'll move the number on him. He'll bet more on that next number, which is obviously not the best price, and it's probably not the best way that the most sophisticated bettors would go about it. But he can't. The results are there.
They certainly are, and I've always likened it to a run at the craps or blackjack table. I mean, look, this is a guy who bet on the Astros in Game 2 of the World Series. You had Kenley Jansen on the bump with a 2-run lead for the Dodgers, so not exactly a recipe for success. And this Eagles, in terms of winning or losing the game, came down to a 4th-and-1, we think, around midfield for the Eagles. So and the Patriots still could have won. I mean, the Eagles, even late in live wagering, were only -$1.80 after they scored the touchdown to Ertz and kicking off. So in terms of this guy being the sharpest and computer formula reinventing the wheel, I think I'd need a larger sample size.
Yeah, absolutely. You just nailed it right there. This is a still, you know, very small sample size that he's gotten on. I compare it more to roulette, like you said, craps and stuff, red or black here, and he's nailed it seven times in a row or so forth. And good for him, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
kudos
awesome
to him for getting to doing this. And I was talking to Ben before this, kudos to him for not making a big publicity thing out of this and trying to kind of stay away. It's no good for the writers and the media for us, but, you know, we get so many guys that are publicity hounds in this industry that, you know, look at me, I can win and win. Oh, by the way, buy my picks or whatever. And this guy has managed to keep his name out of the press for the most part. So I kind of respect him for that.
Yeah, and we've had many conversations about this. We've had conversations with the news desk going back and forth and the kind of quote-unquote hard news since essentially the story shifted from this guy bet millions and millions of dollars on the Eagles to this guy bet and won millions and millions of dollars on the Eagles. But it is just such, I think, the rarity of it as well. And just an exciting story. I think that's kind of the biggest thing. You know, he has the money and you know, apparently maybe we'll see how much he started with or if we get further details, but it's just an interesting and a rare story as well. And, you know, the question I've got on Twitter a lot is, what's the next event? Is it a, you know, is it going to be a UFC 221? Is
championship game in basketball?
Yeah. Is next weekend? Is it March Madness title game? Is he good? Is he done? Is it Canelo Triple G? I mean, you know, it'll be very interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, he absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I know Doug's been Vegas for a long time, and I've covered this industry going on 10 years here. We've heard a lot of wild stories, a lot of big bet tales. This one's way up there, if not the craziest one. I mean, I asked several of the bookmakers that exact question. Is this the most remarkable run you've ever seen? And a lot of them said yes.
Well, I wanted to ask you that. So furthering Better X, or really the Super Bowl weekend in general, and as you've talked to all these bookmakers, odds makers, and you kind of gathered all your information, what was sort of the best like comments you've heard in reaction to a Super Bowl loss and B, Better X?
Well, you know, there was a lot of people get on the bookmakers a lot when they, you know, say, oh, we got beat up pretty bad. Jay Corngave with the Westgate, he answered my phone call. He says, hey, I'm in the emergency room. I got banged up pretty good last night. And I thought that was pretty funny. But, you know, those guys, the fact is that sometimes they lose. And when we call and ask them, they have to say they lose. They're not crying about it. They're not running to us saying, oh, poor us, because everybody knows the results here of long term. They won $78 million on football overall last year. So taking a little hit on the Super Bowl is probably not going to damage them. In terms of Better X, you know, the guys, like I said, they're all kind of just scratching their head right now. They're going, surely this is just a run of luck and we have to kind of sustain it or try to, you know, overcome it. Endure it, I guess, is the word I'm looking for. They're shocked. They're amazed. It's an amazing story.
So before we get out of here, since you hit on that in terms of the overall handle and the overall win, we will obviously have many, many conversations on the legalization of sports betting and the debate. Today is February 6th. The next date the Supreme Court can rule on the New Jersey case is March 5th. So this potentially could have been the last Super Bowl that Nevada has essentially a monopoly on sports betting. I guess two questions. One is, I think it lends kind of to credence to people's fears and people, I mean, bookmakers and people in the industry, that all of the sports books in Nevada combined won $1 million. If you start to take out 1% like the NBA would want on that game, if, for example, the NFL said, we want 1%. That's a big chunk of the pie. And number two, was there any kind of conversation about amongst bookmakers of looking towards that future? And was this kind of the, you know, the last Super Bowl that Las Vegas had by itself?
Yeah, I went to dinner one night with a bunch of the old school guys.
I saw that. You tweeted out that photo. So for everyone listening,
you saw the photo.
Go check out the photo on Purdom's timeline.
There was it was just story after story after drink after drink after drink. So it was a good time. And, yeah, I mean, legalization came up. They are not happy with the NBA trying to request a 1% cut of the handle. on their action. They say, well, are they going to retroactively pay us for 40 years beforehand for us protecting the integrity? So they're not happy about it. The 1% is just too high, they think. You're holding about 5%, 5.5% year over year. Taking a 1% off that, that's 20% of your profit there. So that's tough. Is this the last Super Bowl that Nevada has the so-called monopoly on legal American sports betting? I think it is. I think the Supreme Court is going to rule in favor of New Jersey in some form or fashion, whether they strike the whole federal ban down and open it up to states to legalize sports betting and regulate it how they want to, or if they rule a more nuanced rule in favor of New Jersey. Either way, those two seem to be the most likely outcomes. And that would mean Las Vegas's, monopoly, so-called monopoly, legal monopoly, it would be over.
Now, impossible question. I'll paraphrase that by saying it's an impossible question. But do you think then that makes it worse for Las Vegas? Or as we've kind of discussed, Vegas is Vegas and people are going to go for the atmosphere and everything else around Super Bowl weekend? Or it's a, oh, well, I live in Delaware. Now I can go to Atlantic City instead of Las Vegas.
The majority of people and experts that, academics that have looked at this, think that Nevada will not be impacted that severely. Now, it's hard for me to believe that scenario that you just put up there. I live here in Atlanta. The closest casino is in Cherokee, North Carolina, about 2 hours. If they have a sports book and I have the option of going there or flying to Las Vegas, it seems to me that occasionally I'm going to choose the closer route here, but we'll have to see how that happens. The only way that this really, really hurts Nevada, in my opinion, is if the feds get involved. If the league somehow can get to D.C. and say, look, this is what we want, and this includes Nevada. Now they have to pay us a 1%, and now they have to have a different tax rate, or maybe now they cannot bet on or take bets on college sports. Only way that happens if it gets to the feds. If it stays at a state-by-state level, which is where it's happening right now, I think it only helps Nevada because these other states are pushing these integrity fees. They are pushing these inflated tax rates on sports betting. Nevada's is about 6.75%. Pennsylvania floated one out there that's effective 36%. That's a big-time loser. If you're able to offer better odds like Nevada will be able to compared to these other states with these inflated rates, that's only good for Nevada. The sharp players, the bigger bettors are going to still flock to Vegas for those odds.
What does Nevada currently get the state from Nevada sportsbooks? Is it 0.25?
$220 million.
But I thought it was 0.25% of the overall handle.
That's the Fed tax rate is 0.25% off every wager.
Okay.
It's called the federal gambling excise tax. The $220 million that they won on sports last year equals about 2% of the total gaming win. That's probably where you got that number from. I think they won like $11 billion in total gaming in 2017. All your table games, everything. Only $220 million of that was contributed from sports.
See, I'm under the, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, because let's say it does become legal on a federal level, then we're talking like internet driven, not sports books, beautiful, lavish situations everywhere and OTBs. So the volume increase won't be at the same rate as the expenditure increase. And right, obviously there'll be some sort of cost and variable cost increase for sports books and who's ever booking them on a national landscape. But it won't be to the same degree that the revenue is going to be coming in. So I think there is a way to give these leagues a fee, not 1%, but of something along those lines, and everybody still wins.
If I was to get to make the decision on how this plays out, I would look to a federal system, and I would have a national, coast-to-coast betting exchange, similar to the stock market. And if I was the leagues, and I've mentioned this to some of them, I would want to own that sports betting exchange, and they would just be a broker. There would be no stake in the outcome. They would only get their cut from brokering the wager, basically. It doesn't matter who wins. They would get their cut off how much was wagered. Now, in addition to that, I would have still some state-by-state sports books, allow some people to some facilities to have a traditional sports book and maybe cater to the more general public. But that betting exchange being nationwide, that would allow for the big bettors that are playing offshore now and the guys that put up a lot of money to come back to a legal market and play for big money. Because right now, it's unless you're better X and where they're not really that concerned about you beating them over and over and over, you're not going to be able to get down that kind of money if you're a super sophisticated player. And if you were able to have access to a nationwide betting exchange, you know, that would be attractive. It would be an incentive to come play in this legal market.
Well, you heard it here first. Purdom is leaving ESPN to be president of the National Betting Trade Association. It's been great working with you, Purdom. No, it's fascinating. There will be no shortage of discussion about it in the coming months. And whenever it happens, there are going to be a lot of questions about how it goes. Purdom, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to give you a couple days off, right? I think the next couple weeks. That's what I heard.
I think so. I think I'm getting a couple days off later this week.
Okay, good. I'll double check that with the bosses. Great work this NFL season, specifically last week in Vegas. And I will talk to you soon, man.
Appreciate it, guys. Good work with you guys too on the podcast, taking over for our former colleague there, Mr. Millman. So good job taking over for him.
Thank you very much, and great assistance along the way from you. Travel safely.
You too, guys.
All right. And that's David Purdom. Go check out his work, ESPN, ESPN.com, and obviously that aforementioned photo of him on his Twitter feed. So let's just wrap things up, Ben. We're going to figure out what's going on moving forward, but we are going to have a weekly podcast, going to have a lot of great content as the sports calendar shifts to college basketball's up next, and then obviously the fighting game, and we track the legalization saga as well.
Yeah, I think this is year three, I believe, for Chalk, either three or four. They start to blend together. There is no off season. I mean, there's always something to gamble on. And now kind of woven into all that is the legalization debate, which is very much real. As opposed to previous years, it was kind of, the New Jersey case is going on, but it's heading to the Third Circuit court or it's heading to this court or blah, blah, blah. You know, it's coming. A decision is coming. It will be in March or it will be in April or it will then very, very likely be in May if it's not one of those. And there will be a whole lot of ramifications for a whole lot of places and the leagues and everyone. So, you know, regardless of March Madness happening and the NFL draft and other events,
right,
NBA finals, there's plenty of stuff to actually bet on, but the future of gambling will also be a very interesting topic coming up.
Oh, I mean, 2018 is the signature year. I think this all changes. And David just mentioned it a moment ago, the monopoly that is Nevada, on sports betting is no longer. All right, Ben, good run. Great job again with the Clement over prop. I mean, that thing was cashed right away, so nicely done. I had to sweat out mine a little bit, but it got there.
They all cash the same.
They all cash the same, but my predictions stink the same as well. I had a rough playoff. It's okay then. By no means am I a tout or claim to be one. All right, that does it for this podcast. Thanks to all of our listeners. Great football season in the books. And we'll continue moving forward. For Ben Fox, I'm Doug Kazarian. This has been the Behind the Bets podcast.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.